bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't gamble. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Oh, that music, it sends chills down my spine. It can mean only one thing. Bet the Board is back, Season 3, powered by Bet Online. I am your host, Todd Furman, and for 2 years running, we had to try and go through in-depth contract negotiations to bring him back for Season 3. The incomparable Payne Insider, how are you, buddy?
Awesome. Time away makes the heart grow fonder, my friend.
Yeah, the unfortunate part, that a lot of our listeners had time away from both you and I. We naturally have to spend some quality time together during the offseason. A lot of major announcements coming about Bet the Board as we continue to evolve in the space. First things first, you can follow me on Twitter at Todd Furman. You can follow Payne on Twitter as well at Payne Insider. And, of course, subscribe to the Bet the Board podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud. But, Payne, I'll let you have the floor with the major announcements surrounding this podcast.
Well, I mean, first of all, I think we're back. Season 3, a lot of people say the market doesn't lie. And so first things first, you know, looking at numbers, that's all accredited to our loyal listeners. September 2014, we kind of started this, 400 listens. Fast forward like 17 months, Super Bowl podcast, February 2016, all platforms, we're at about 15,000 listeners now. So that's the market speaking. I don't think we're anywhere close to where we want to be, but it's a great start. So thanks to all the loyal listeners of Bet the Board. We've branched out a little bit at this time. So we have opened a website that is now live, bettheboardpodcast.com. All of the podcasts will be housed there. Brand new betting articles released each week, and we have also got some swag out there, a lot of nice gambling-centric t-shirts, so to speak, a lot of fun t-shirts. So we're live, bettheboardpodcast.com.
Really looking forward to that. As always, appreciate your feedback through social media, as the website will be an ongoing evolution trying to cater to all of your gambling needs. Of course, I'd be remiss in saying that if I didn't say that we have Dave Mason back. We'll get to him in just a matter of minutes to set the table for the season coming up. But, Payne, a little bit of business before we get to Dave. Takeaways from the preseason. I get all the questions, get absolutely inundated with them. People want to know, what should they take away from these exhibition football games? Is it time to panic if you're an Arizona Cardinals fan? Is it time to get excited from what you've seen from the Tennessee Titans and Marcus Mariota? So before we get into some of the specifics, I wanted to get your take on just conceptually what you do with some of the preseason games and how it may impact your betting for week one and moving forward.
I think the Philadelphia Eagles last year let us know how important preseason is. When you talk around the league, you get an idea that a lot of the coaches want to do away with preseason. They can gauge their players, their teams in their practices, in their inner squad scrimmages. So you definitely don't want to jump to conclusions. A lot of these teams are not even game planning. Some of them are. If, you know, you get the information in certain games, the Patriots last week had a full-blown game plan as if it were, you know, the Super Bowl. Some teams don't do that. Everyone's raving about Dak Prescott. I know we'll get to that later with him and the Dallas Cowboys, already appointing him the second coming. Well, you know, you're a backup quarterback. It's preseason. Nobody's got tape on you. Nobody's game planning for you. It becomes a completely different beast in the regular season. Obviously, you know, new coaches get implemented. You want to see the kind of things they're running. Adam Gase down in Miami, at this point, we've seen what he's done with quarterbacks. It looks like he can call a great game. He's got a good game plan. So those are the kind of things that I'm looking for. New coaches, what they're implementing, new coordinators, what they're implementing. And then, again, some growth. Marcus Mariota looks very good. Again, we'll see what it looks like when teams start to game plan for him.
Always want to try and keep our loyal listeners that are probably fans of their favorite teams from pushing that panic button all too soon or booking their trip to Houston to be part of Super Bowl 51 festivities. But you know what? There is one man on this podcast who isn't going to be anointed the second coming, but we still bring him on every week. And that's Dave Mason from Bet Online. You can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. Dave, we've missed you since the Super Bowl podcast. We have to get down to business first. What kind of great offers can our listeners expect for the 2016-2017 NFL season?
Hey, fellas, good to be back this season. Well, just like last year, we're going to have a special bonus offer for your listeners. It's going to be for a limited time only. We'll figure it out a little bit later in the season. But for a limited time only, we're going to give a 75% welcome bonus for new members and a 50% reload bonus for guys looking for a reload. The code for the newbie bonus is 75BTB, and the code for the reload is 50BTB. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard. But, you know, even when that bonus does go away, whenever it does later on in the season, we still have our lifetime bonus guarantee. That's going to be there 365 days a year, 25% reload on all your qualifying deposits. Stuff that really aren't promotions, but people love about Bet Online. We're going to have the earliest opening odds in the industry for college football and NFL this year. True live betting is back. When I say true live betting, we're one of the few U.S.-facing books that offer live betting all throughout the game, not just timeouts. High limits. Our rebet functionality is back. So, yeah, we're ready for another good football season here.
Hey, we're looking forward to it. I know our listeners were ecstatic a year ago with some of the generous offers that were available. And, of course, we reference Bet Online numbers throughout the podcast. So as soon as you hear the prices we're talking about, you go right over there and bet them to know exactly what the professionals are doing. Now, Dave, of course, you've had the futures up on the board for quite some time. Division futures, win totals, you name it. Super Bowl stuff wanted to figure out what was going on with what you guys have seen so far. Ticket count, some of the more popular teams being bet, any potential liabilities. So much can change over the course of a 17-week regular season. But what are some of the betting trends you've seen as far as Super Bowl futures thus far?
Right. Okay, well, Super Bowl, yeah, they've been up forever now, probably mid-February. So we've taken a lot of action on them. As far as bet count is concerned, the most bets coming in are the Patriots number one, the Packers number two, and the Cardinals number three. So two of the three of the top teams on the board. The Pats are currently 7-1, Packers are +750, and the Cards are 10-1. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that those are our biggest exposures, and they aren't. Our biggest exposures are the Giants. They're down to 14-1. The Browns, for some real weird reason, at 200-1. And the Colts at 18-1. I mean, the Giants and the Browns are massive exposures. I mean, everything else, like the Giants is our biggest exposure, and it's about six times bigger than the Colts, who are our third exposure. So, yeah, I mean, Giants are always one of our – traditionally, you're pretty exposed on the Giants when it comes to Super Bowl futures. I think that just has a lot to do with so many bettors coming out of the New York area betting their team. Yeah, those are our biggest exposures, biggest bet counts, but the action's great on the futures so far.
And with the Browns, like you said, nothing to really be worried about. I'm sure Payne would echo those same sentiments. Can't really see anybody seeing them as a viable Super Bowl contender this year. Now, of course, win totals as well. Payne mentioned Dak Prescott and some of the change that's going on for the Cowboys. Before we get into the individual win totals, what do some of the updated division futures look like, maybe starting with the NFC East, now that we know Tony Romo is going to be out for as few as 6 weeks, maybe as many as 10?
Right. Well, the NFC East, we had to adjust those, obviously, the other day. The Cowboys were the +185 favorite, I believe, in the NFC East, and they're currently +240. So now the Giants jump up at +145. They're the favorites. And again, we're exposed on the Giants again. So the Skins are still third, and then the Eagles are following up. They're number four. And we're not expecting great things from the Eagles this season. Go ahead.
No, and I was saying, from a division exposure standpoint, I would assume if the Browns are being bet to win the Super Bowl, is it safe to say they're also betting them to win the AFC North as well this season?
Yes, they are. 20-1. They're our biggest division exposure, along with the Niners at 20-1 and the Titans 9-1. As you can see, a trend there. When it comes to exposures, people like the long shots when it comes. You know, it only takes a few bets at 200-1 on the Browns to put the numbers out of whack to get yourself in red. You know, like MLB, I always look through halfway through the season, and I forget who it was. It was like the Phillies and a couple other teams that just had it. The Braves, I think. They were our biggest exposures in mid-July. So, you know, it just takes a few bets on those big numbers to really put you out of whack.
Yeah, similar trends to, I think, what you'll see in most sports books, obviously, this year notwithstanding. When I was at Caesars, you'd see the Cubs, they'd be 30 games out of potentially winning the National League Central. People would want to bet them. Liability gets ratcheted up. And a better parallel for any soccer fans on the podcast, Team USA to win the World Cup. I think every book that deals to a North American customer, you don't worry too much about $500,000, maybe a couple million dollars in liabilities for something that's probably not going to happen. When we look at some of the win totals, Dave, any teams that have really surprised you as far as sharp action or just very public sides that are getting bet one way or another?
The sharpest we've seen is the Colts on the under. Went to 9.5 minus one. No, they bet at 9.5, under 9.5, minus 140 and minus 150. It's currently down to 9 under minus 125. So that was the sharpest we've seen. Public. Under on the Eagles, under 7, over on the Pats, over 10.5, under on the Browns. So that's kind of weird. It's under on the Browns on the win totals, but when it comes to Super Bowl, I guess they're expecting them to win the Super Bowl with 4 wins. I don't know.
Mason, let's talk about the Patriots a little bit. How have you know, the Brady situation, how has that really moved the market? I know when we talk about week-to-week spreads, that's changed dramatically, especially that week one line. But the futures market, win totals, Super Bowl odds, they haven't seemed to fluctuate that much.
No, they really haven't. You know, they're still the favorite to win the Super Bowl. What did I say? Plus 700, I believe, 7-1. Their win total is up to 11, you know, from 10.5 to 11. So, you know, I guess the bettors just think they're going to go in there and do their thing, and who can fault them? You know what I mean? That organization is just such a winner that they're still, what, like minus 220, I think, to win the AFC East. So numbers really have not dropped at all, and people continue to bet them. So.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking.
I thought they'd drop a little bit, but no, not at all.
Yeah, they've actually gone up a little bit. You know, last question there. Have you guys, we kind of factored it in to about 5 or 6 points, the drop-off from Brady to Garoppolo. Any feeling on that, how strong that drop-off is points-wise?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds about accurate. I'm just using the week one numbers as a gauge. I believe it was a pick-em before the suspension came out, and it's now 5.5. So, yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, no, it's actually 6 now. It's actually 6. Sorry about that. So, yeah, 5-6 points. It was, I believe, a pick'em was the last I saw.
Yeah, where you guys opened, yeah.
Yeah.
So this is awesome stuff. You know, our listeners are huge, huge Patriots fans, so I think this is a lot of good information. Before we let you go, what do we – let's recap those bonuses for everybody.
Absolutely. This is our kickoff special. For Bet the Board listeners, if you don't have a BetOnline account, get over there, betonline.ag, and get yourself a 75% welcome bonus. Use code 75BTB. If you're already a betonline.ag member, we're going to give you a 50% one-time reload bonus. Use code 50BTB. And those terms can be found on promotions.betonline.ag/BetTheBoard. One last little thing I want to throw in there. One of our bettors, one of our players is going to get to bet $100,000 of our money on the Broncos versus Panthers kickoff game, the first game of the season. That's going to be our money. If he loses, he doesn't keep $100,000. He just keeps the winnings, basically. So that falls under our Bet Set promotions, which is a series of promotions we ran over the summer. All the details there can be found on our promotions page. So if when you're over the site, look for Bet Set and find out how you can be the lucky guy who bets $100,000 on the kickoff game. You keep the winnings.
Dave, it's always a pleasure. Looking forward to another busy season here of working with Bet Online here with Bet the Board podcast. And folks, they can always find you on social media at Dave Mason, BOL, some great tidbits throughout the course of the week and especially on Sunday mornings as far as the book exposure. Dave, will catch up with you when we actually have some football for real next week to break down that Panthers-Broncos game that you mentioned right before.
Awesome, guys. Talk to you next week.
It's Dave Mason, folks, and like we said in the opening of the podcast, we're thrilled to have BetOnline back for a second season as our featured sportsbook sponsor here on Bet the Board. Paying some interesting tidbits from Mason, we may as well start in the AFC East, figuring out the point value drop-off from Tom Brady to Jimmy Garoppolo. He mentioned the Patriots still being one of the most popular teams that bettors are going over their win total at 10.5. Overwhelming favorites at minus 250. You look at the rest of the prices in the division. The Bills check in as second favorites, if you want to call them that, at 6-1. The Jets behind them at 13-2. And, of course, your beloved Dolphins, a long shot at 17-2 to win the AFC East here at BetOnline.
Yeah, we've seen the drastic movement, obviously, with their week-to-week lines. That week one opener pick, you're now at 6. But, again, those win totals, those future bets, they still kind of remain the same. And back in July, when we hadn't seen Jimmy Garoppolo get snaps, I estimated that downgrade being roughly 5 to 6 points. After seeing him, I think we're probably closer to 6. The market seems to agree with that. The question here becomes is where does the market adjust week to week thereafter? And it's mostly based on setting. And when I talk about the setting, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo right now has the advantage of being able to mentally prepare, you know, for this start for 2 months. Bill Belichick, seeing what Jimmy Garoppolo has every day of practice, has the opportunity to game plan for 2 months. He knows what Arizona does defensively. So that's going to be huge in terms of devising a game plan. This is a much different setting than, let's say, Brady randomly misses a game in week 7 and suddenly, you know, Garoppolo's thrusted into the starting role only a few days of prep time. So it's going to be interesting to see. Arizona, extremely tough place to play, and we'll make a quick adjustment from there. Is this guy an absolute abortion? Are we moving it to 7 points? Or does he show up well on the road in one of the toughest environments in football, and we're kind of downgrading that adjustment to 4, 4.5 points. So it'll be interesting to monitor.
Brady's not the only face, though, that the Patriots will be without for the entire – oh, well, Brady obviously will miss the first 4 games, but there's a number of familiar names that are dealing with injuries. And, of course, the Patriots did send Chandler Jones to Arizona. What do we make of the Patriots' running back situation and what they have going on with their ability to put pressure on opposing quarterbacks?
Yeah, obviously Chandler Jones is a huge loss. You're going to have to kind of generate pressure from other areas, meaning you're going to have to send some blitzes, you're going to have to disguise your packages a little bit and potentially leave you vulnerable to the big play. So Belichick, defensive guy, I'm sure he'll get it figured out. The question mark there is they thought Chandler Jones was probably going to leave in free agency, so they tried getting an offensive lineman out of him. The lineman has not panned out for them yet. Might not even start. He's been injured, so it looks like Arizona just absolutely robbed them in that trade.
It'll be very fascinating to see one unfold with the Patriots. We know there's been also some player personnel movement, them trying to trade Stork to the Redskins, although he failed his physical, and of course them acquiring a former first-round pick in Barkevious Mingo from the Browns as the Browns try and shed some salary cap. New England, not the only team in the division, though, Payne. Your Dolphins right there in South Florida, the Jets, Bills. What should some of our listeners expect from those three teams when you talk about the Bills having issues on the defensive side of the ball? The Jets kind of the biggest mystery, you know, one bad half of way of from going to the playoffs with an 11-5 record. And Miami, we've seen money come in against them, and of course we'll get to this in greater detail for their opener against Seattle, but a team not extremely deep at any particularly important position.
Yeah, I think when you talk about the Jets, it's all defense. It's Todd Bowles defensively. Casey Rogers, probably the best defensive line coach in all of football. This could be the very best defense in all of football. It really afforded Ryan Fitzpatrick the luxury of being able to kind of go out there and create short fields and create beneficial positions for that offense that, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick is who he is at this point. He's not very good. He's kind of just, your stable post there. This team is going to be led by defense, bottom line. So the Jets, I don't think, take a huge drop back. I know a lot of sharp money has come in on the under win total this year for the Jets. When we talk about the Dolphins, I think there's a glimmer of hope there for this organization. hiring Gase, extremely smart. His game plan so far in the preseason have been elite. He's won playoff games with a guy currently trying out for baseball teams. He's won games with a QB out of his prime, and he likely saved another QB's career with Jay Cutler. So you just kind of have to hope the stench of the organization doesn't really overpower Gase and his abilities. They have to somehow figure out how to get Mike Tenenbaum to take a step back, kind of just be a liaison that puts everyone in touch, be that middleman. His Rolodex is endless at that point. At this point, he's got great relationships around the league. So that's kind of the big question here. You have to ask yourself, though, organizationally, kind of giving Adam Gase a tough start of the year. So big stadium build, Hard Rock Stadium. All these teams are able to kind of request scheduling changes before the actual NFL spits out these schedules. And so the Dolphins requested two road games to start the season. Well, congratulations. You're a 10.5-point dog to Seattle. You would have been a 7-point dog to New England. Fortunately, you lucked out with the Brady situation. And we talk about teams that start 0-2 in the NFL since 2007. Just five of them have made the playoffs out of 66 teams. So kind of a tough bone to throw Adam Gase in his first year. So we'll see how that goes. In terms of Buffalo, you know, there probably isn't a less self-aware football coach than Rex Ryan. You know, he does a fantastic job. He hypes his team. He wins the weekly press conference, but he's a below-average football coach. The record says that he's 58 and 60 overall. So there's kind of these coaches that look at their roster, they look at the talent they have, and they put those players in the team and the organization in best positions to win. Rex is the opposite. He does what's best for Rex. His system is the best, and if the parts don't necessarily fit, he's going to do what Rex wants to do. And we looked at this team before he got there. They got after the quarterback first in QB pressures, first in sacks. He then changes the defense in his first year. They drop all the way down to 29th in adjusted sack rate. He brings in his more inept brother, who led the least efficient defense in all of football last year. So, you know, Rex kind of has to be the guy that's always right. He drafted two guys this year. Huge question marks about injuries. We saw the draft prop market. Really hate those guys, Shaq Lawson, Reggie Ragland. Nope, right through the dead end sign. I'm drafting them anyways. Ragland looks like he's out for the year. Shaq Lawson at least half the season. So this is a Bills team that professionals absolutely hate. They have gone under in a big way on the Bills this year.
It's fun to have those nice shiny toys, but you do need them on the field. Win totals for the division currently at Bet Online. You're looking at the Buffalo Bills, as you mentioned, 8 under minus $1.30. The Miami Dolphins sit at 7 wins under minus $1.30 there. The New York Jets over under 8 minus $1.60 under. And the Patriots win total at 11 under minus $1.30. Before we put a nice neat bow on the AFC East, paying any of those win totals at current numbers catch your interest?
Again, the Bills seem to be one of the larger positions from professional bettors. Jets got a little love early going under that, but nothing too crazy at this point.
The AFC East, a division that'll be defined early in the season by players not on the field, a division that'll be defined by players returning to the field. The AFC South, Andrew Luck, of course, comes back to lead the Colts offensively. We've heard so much hype about the Jacksonville Jaguars finally turning the corner. Can Gus Bradley get this defense to play to its potential? And a team paying maybe flying under the radar a bit with the addition of Brock Osweiler, a receiving core that arguably could be the best in the division, the Houston Texans. Where do we look to start in the AFC South and what we may be able to expect this season?
Yeah, I think Mason touched on the Colts a little bit. He saw some sharp action on the under 9.5 there. There's been some injuries to that team, one on the offensive line, one Devontae Davis, and that could be the most crucial one. This back seven might be the worst in football. That was before Vontae Davis went down. Lord only knows what they're going to be at this point, but Andrew Luck, you know, if he can get back to that form, the division's wide open. So this team is going to come and go based on Andrew Luck. And if he gets back into form, they have a great shot to win this division again. But that defense, just an absolute mess. The Jaguars, you know, for me and for most people in the market, when everybody goes right, I want to be going left. So I haven't touched this total yet, but I think there'll be some value fading this team early on. We talk about Gus Bradley. I thought he was going to be Yeah, a very good NFL coach. Granted, he came to Jacksonville. That roster was depleted more than any team in the NFL. I thought it would take a few years. They've given him a few years. And the question marks still remain on the defensive side of the ball, which is his calling card. And we thought it would be a big loss in Seattle. But those defenses, they still continue to be good without Gus Bradley. So big question mark year for Gus Bradley here. This team, and I've kind of talked about this, is the correlation from fantasy to the betting markets. And a lot of people enamored with Blake Bortles and what he did fantasy-wise last year. A lot of people love those wide receivers, and I get it. But the offense isn't very efficient. The offense actually isn't very good. They put up all these numbers basically trailing the entire season. So for the fantasy guys who love this team, you know, I think it's kind of causing this overvalue in the marketplace. So it's going to be interesting to see how this Jaguars team moves forward. I'm not as high on them as most. The Titans, let's just keep it quick. I think they're going to be sneaky good. A lot of professional money going over 5.5. Marcus Mariota's look good. The big question mark here for me, though, is Mike Mularkey. Again, another guy who's not very self-aware. He's yelling to the high tops that we're going to do what I do best. We're going to do what I've done great all these years. I believe he's 18-31 as a head football coach, so that hasn't been that great. The Texans, tons of offensive weapons. You add Lamar Miller. I know he's basically everybody's fantasy breakout running back this year. Great weapons. Brock Osweiler, I know a lot of people aren't in love. At this point, though, under O'Brien, when you look at what he's done with this team, yes, the division hasn't been great, but Hoyer has been his best quarterback to date. So even if Osweiler is a small improvement and an average quarterback, that's a massive upgrade. They've added weapons. The defense looked very good without J.J. Watt in their preseason game. So I think that's going to be the sneaky team here. If you can get them at plus 200, I've seen a little bit higher too. That's probably the way I would look here in the division.
And you mentioned Brock Osweiler kind of being the X factor. We've seen Bill O'Brien's impact on quarterbacks. Hoyer didn't have the potential, but just the drop-off in play at the collegiate level of Christian Hackenberg with and without Coach O'Brien, maybe it'll speak to what Brock is able to accomplish as pivot for the Texans. Division odds, as you mentioned, the Colts, the favorite at 7-5 right now at BetOnline. The Houston Texans behind them at 2-1. Jacksonville, everybody Cinderella listed at 3-1. And the Tennessee Titans at 9-1. One last thing, Payne, you mentioned some of these win totals. Anything you really expect as far as these four teams to change from now until the start of the season?
You know, unless there's injury, which I don't see, you know, happening at this point. Most guys are sitting out for, you know, their week four game, but you can definitely have some injuries in practice. We saw that very close to home right here with the Dolphins yesterday. Kenny Stills with a huge scare. Laremy Tunsil got banged up. Devontae Parker went down again. He's a, you know, really slow healer. So, of course, there's some things that can happen injury-wise. But at this point, you know, we're looking a week out from the season. The market's pretty set. These numbers have been out forever at this point. So it's tough to kind of enter the market now for a lot of professional bettors.
Yeah, definitely. The ship has sailed, so to speak, on some of the numbers, unless, as you mentioned, you want to take the contrarian angle and go against some of the trendy teams, hoping to save a quarter, maybe even grab yourself a half a win in certain instances. AFC North, we know who the top dog in the division is, at least going into the season, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Listed at 11-10 favorites to take home that divisional crown. The Cincinnati Bengals behind them at 7-4. Baltimore, kind of that X factor, in my opinion, despite some of the major injuries that they've dealt with this preseason. And John Harbaugh pretty much saying he thinks that the preseason should be entirely eliminated at 7-2. And as Mason mentioned, the team that they'll be rooting against, well, at least for the season, probably they'll need them every single week, the Cleveland Browns at 20-1. What are some of the biggest storylines you see in the AFC North this season?
Mike Tomlin, you know, how good is he? There's a lot of internal issues that have been going on there with him. Players not liking some of his coordinators. We've seen with Todd Haley and Big Ben over the years. Now players not really in love with him. Really too physical is what everybody's saying. The one benefit to the Steelers this year is they have absolutely no travel. 5,100 miles they travel all season long. Far and away the fewest travel of any team in the NFL. They're going to get Le'Veon Bell back. The suspension was shortened, so that's a positive thing there. We're still waiting for Sammy Coates, I guess, to kind of turn the corner. Everyone's been raving about him. Another big thing I talk about in getting correct information, everyone's raving about Sammy Coates. You know, basically three turnovers for two games. We'll see if he can kind of take that next step and be another dynamic dimension to that offense. The Bengals, I don't know where they're going at this point. I've never been a huge Marvin Lewis guy. I thought Hugh Jackson was kind of the brains of that offense. Will Andy Dalton regress this season without Hugh Jackson? We will see. And also, in terms of whether you're buying or selling on the Bengals, I know some late injury misfortune last year with A.J. Green and Andy Dalton, but they were overall the healthiest team in 2015. So that's one of the things you want to look at when you're gauging these win totals. How healthy were teams? Did they lose a lot of close games? Did they win a lot of close games? Those are kind of some of the determining factors when you're looking at win totals in general. The Browns, you know, they're the Browns. RG3 just isn't that guy. There's a lot of people, a lot of scouts, a lot of people in organizations that absolutely love Hugh Jackson, but he has a massive ego, and they just think RG3 is going to basically strip him of what could be great potential as a head coach. When you fizzle out and potentially fizzle out this badly, you might not get a second crack. As for the Ravens, it's a team that initially we really liked. This win total, when it first opened as low as 7 minus 50 some places. We gobbled that up, did get as high as 8.5. We did see some sharp buyback looking for that middle. This is a team that we were kind of high on. They lost 9 games last year by one possession or less. And that's, again, one thing you really want to look at when you're gauging win totals. That will start to turn around a little bit in the long run. Good fortune will eventually turn your way. But when you look at a team, and this is another team, they had the third most injuries in the league last year. So third most missed games overall. So those, again, are some factors. Joe Flacco needs to be the guy that steps up and start playing like the old Joe Flacco. He was very bad. Again, injuries are going to hinder his performance. I think his number one receiver last year, after everyone got injured, was like Aiken. But he was the 28th best quarterback by efficiency. You just can't have that from a player whose cap hit is nearly $23 million. So I know a lot of the sharp guys like the Ravens this year. The number's kind of burnt at this point, though.
And you mentioned the Ravens. Their win total sits at 8. You have to lay $1.45 now at BetOnline to try and go over that particular price tag. The Steelers total, 10.5. And when you look at the two teams residing in Ohio, Cincinnati, 9.5, minus $1.20 to the under. And the Cleveland Browns win totals ticked up from 4.5 to 5. Lay $1.25 if you're looking to go under 5. And before we close the book on the AFC North, Payne, any player movement that surprised you or folks that could have a fantasy impact that our listeners should be keeping an eye on this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody knows A.J. Green at this point, but he's battled some injuries, and he was a guy that was kind of going in that late second round. I would not be shocked, because I know everyone thinks Hugh Jackson as this pass guy, but he actually ran the ball a ton there and took a lot of weight off of Andy Dalton's shoulders. I think they're going to be more pass-centric this year. There's not a lot of other weapons on that offense for the Bengals. I think A.J. Green, if he can stay healthy, is going to have a monster year. So not so much a breakout player, but I think a guy that kind of comes back and has that breakout season. We've kind of all been expecting it from A.J. Green, and as good as he is, you know, he's not in that same mention at this point with Antonio Brown and Julio Jones. I think he kind of takes that next step this year.
And I'll say one of the players that may have a fantasy impact that won't be on the Bengals roster, and of course we'll talk about his impact in his new location in greater detail, Marvin Jones, kind of the unheralded star in that offense and what he was able to bring to the table each and every week. The final division in the AFC, and arguably one of the most intriguing, with kind of a changing of the guard taking place at the top, the AFC West. Right now you're looking at Kansas City, a slight favorite to win the division at 7-4. The Broncos behind them check in at 11-5. Everybody's favorite West Coast Cinderella, we'll call them the West Coast version of the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Oakland Raiders at 5-2, and San Diego, led by the aging veteran Phillip Rivers at 13-2. AFC West, I guess we'll start with the biggest storyline here. Trevor Siemian being named the starting quarterback for the Broncos. First off, did that surprise you at all, Coach Kubiak electing to go in that direction with an unproven commodity under center?
I can't believe you said his name. After his contributions to that 2013 Ohio State fiasco, late cover, I won't even say his goddamn name anymore. C.J. Anderson is going to be the catalyst, I think, to this offense for Gary Kubiak. We know he wants to run the ball. Mark Sanchez at this point, you know, crapped in his helmet. Basically, he's going to be cut, I think, or traded at this point. Teams who potentially don't want to go through the waiver wire process might give up a sixth or seventh round for Sanchez. I think what this really says, though, is We really like Paxton Lynch, and we think he can come around, and maybe, you know, after 4 or 5 weeks, we kind of implement him into this system. What we saw last year from Peyton Manning, and we used that NASCAR analogy, he kind of spit and sputtered down the stretch and just had enough in the gas tank. But they were one of the worst teams in quarterback efficiency, and that defense is so good that I'm thinking they think pretty much put any quarterback in there, if he's not like in the bottom five of quarterbacks, we're going to still be pretty successful here. So I think a huge dose of CJ Anderson in defense, the quarterback, as long as he doesn't make mistakes, is going to be fine. When it comes to the Raiders, you nailed it. Everybody's darling. Again, everyone goes right. I want to be going left here. I just don't see it yet for the Raiders. A lot of weapons on offense. Really like the young rookie Washington from Washington. I think he'll take a lot of Latavius Murray's carries this year. I am not sold on Carr yet, and we kind of hammered this a little bit last year. I know he was a rookie. He hit that rookie wall. But, man, was he bad the last 10 games or so. Horrific in the fourth quarter. The key here is when you gauge these teams and those rookies, everybody wants to get their rookie acclimated, and they want to get them, you know, immersed in the system, and they end up doing rookie camp and then mini camp, and then they play more in the preseason games. And so by the time they get to week 10, it's like they've already played a 20-game season. So we see that fizzle. We saw it from Amari Cooper. He's going to have to be there and be a dynamic weapon for all 16 games if the Raiders want to take this next step. It's wide open. I think, obviously, the Chiefs in the market are the favorite. Andy Reid is just stockpiled with talent this year. He's a very good coach. Can he win the big game? That's still the question mark. But in this division setting, I think he's going to be very good. And I guess, you know, the sleeper team here, it's the Chargers. This team has been pummeled by professionals. We saw them open, I think, 7 under minus 50. We're now at 7 over minus 60 in a lot of places. Ken Wisenhunt is the big reason for that. He's back as an offensive coordinator. We saw great success from this offense under Wisenhunt before he went to go take a head coaching gig. We are in a passing league. You know, this isn't your grandpappy's NFL, but you still need to be able to run the ball and stop the run, and that's why the Chargers were so bad last year. They were virtually dead last in stopping the run in efficiency, dead last in rushing the ball in efficiency offensively. So you're going to have to fix those a little bit. Special teams weren't very good. I heard they only had 84 punt return yards total, so you go out, get Travis Benjamin. I think that's a huge acquisition to help out the special teams a little bit. So the Chargers are a big, you know, professional total going over 7. Joey Bosa really, really helps. It's a team that, again, could not stop the run, so it was good getting him in. I think that'll be a benefit as well.
You'd have to think the Chargers are going to be a little bit more settled on the offensive line this season, though. Last year, I know you talked about the professionals going over their win total. Arguably, there wasn't a team in the entire league that had to go through more reshuffling with that particular unit. Phillip Rivers leading all sorts of career seasons, probably for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. The offensive line was probably average coming into the season, and that's if they stayed healthy. They were just decimated by injury, so that offensive line was just, you know, it was a boat being held together by duct tape in the Pacific Ocean. So that's going to be key. They drafted a guy. They brought in a new center. I think there's going to be some change there offensively, moving guys around, shifting them around. I still think there's a question mark at left tackle, but this offensive line should be improved a little bit. The defense, the corners were very strong for them. Maybe Manti Te'o takes the next step this year at linebacker, but this is a team that, again, with Wisenhunt calling the plays, has been pretty successful with Phillip Rivers, so that's a nice added dimension. The division, I think, is really wide open. Chiefs just kind of a notch above everybody else due to kind of knowing the system. Andy Reid is just loaded this year with talent, and I think Jeremy Maclin really, really has a big year.
Denver's win total sits at 9 flat. Kansas City, as you mentioned, 9.5. You do have to lay $1.25 if you want to go over that particular win total at Bet Online. You're looking at the Oakland Raiders now, 8.5 minus $1.15 to the over. And, of course, the Chargers picking up the rear. As you mentioned, Payne, you've seen a ton of sharp moving over the total. Win now sits at 7 minus $1.60. One last thing I wanted to ask you about the Broncos. Do you worry at all about that defense, given defense is predicated so much on intensity and matching what we saw last year in their quest to win a Super Bowl championship for Peyton Manning? And there are two major defections on that side. No Malik Jackson in the interior and no Danny Trevathan, the team's leading tackler and linebacker.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I know they were able to re-sign Wolf, which was huge. He was actually the number one defensive lineman against the run last year. So, you know, keeping him was huge. But, yeah, you nailed it. I mean, sometimes, you know, it takes energy and effort to play defense in any sport. It takes effort. It takes hustle. So when you've already got that championship ring, does that energy and effort subside a little bit? Does it tick down a little bit? How bad will the quarterback situation be when, if it's an absolute train wreck, sometimes the guys look at each other on the other side and be like, okay, like, you know, this just isn't going to work this year. And they start to pack it in a little bit. So we'll see. There's definitely that question there. But at this point, coming into the season fresh, you know, it'll be interesting to see the first week of the season. We've seen drastic movement on that week one game. We'll discuss it more next week on the week one podcast of Bet the Board. But I think the Broncos at this point, again, we just talked about how bad Peyton Manning was last year. Any quarterback at this point could really be an upgrade when you look at those efficiency numbers and how bad they were a season ago. I know they won the Super Bowl with Manning. He did enough, but man, his efficiency numbers were just god awful. So it'll be interesting to see the quarterback situation. Not sure you can get any worse.
So much of it boils down to protecting the football and winning that turnover battle each and every week. The one thing we have seen is, and we'll talk about it with Carolina, that Super Bowl hangover, not so much from teams winning the title, but the team that came up on the short end of the stick, as you mentioned, will be a great rematch when Carolina goes to Denver. The Panthers right now, a 3-point favorite. You have seen some money coming on the under. A more in-depth breakdown coming with our week one preview. The man you hear breaking everything down the way only he can, that of Payne Insider. You can follow him on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me on Twitter as well, at Todd Furman. And of course, follow the show's Twitter handle at Bet the Board Pod. Make sure to visit our brand new website at bettheboardpodcast.com and sign up for iTunes and SoundCloud to have these podcasts at your disposal as soon as they drop. And for what we do, Payne, every week, I know we'll have some new listeners joining the fray that aren't that familiar. We like to keep things light. Football season has a way of taking a toll on professionals like ourselves. You need that distraction each and every week throughout the regular season. So, by popular demand, we're bringing back the movie review. We're not going to provide you a full-scale analysis like we're top-shelf movie critics. More, should you spend the 10, 11 bucks or whatever it costs, depending on where you live, give up an hour and a half to 2 hours of your life and go check out a movie. I want to know, Payne, some of the best summer movies you've seen, since for me, oftentimes they're in April, May, June, what have you. I don't spend a whole lot of time in the theater.
Yeah, I think the biggest one for me, really liked Infiltrator. That was one of my favorite movies this summer. Love everything about it, so you definitely want to go see that. And then I think the one that both of us most recently saw was Hell or High Water. So those are probably my two favorite movies this summer. All the good movies usually start to come out later in the year, especially around holiday time. So we're going to be jam-packed talking about those movies and actually going to see them. But for the summer, those are probably my two favorite without question.
And I feel for, you know, a lot of the stuff we do preparation-wise that goes into the podcast, of course, for the games, the most important part, but the movies as well. You know, do we want to integrate our audience even more so than we already do and kind of share the movie we're going to be seeing in the coming week so folks can see it with us, maybe offer a little bit of feedback on social media? Since usually I feel like, you know, I'll text you on Sunday, hey, what movie are we going to see for Tuesday, and don't get a chance to share with our listenership so they can go on their own. They can take their wives, take their girlfriends, take their kids. Well, not kids, not as much for some of the movies we review, to try and make sure that we provide that family atmosphere.
Look at you using that lump 3 feet above your ass. That's a good idea. That is a very good idea. I think that's probably something we should do. And now, this time of year, you're going to be paying for two tickets, it sounds like.
Oh, I was waiting for the podcast and how long before you took your shots. And so I'm surprised you held
back. It wasn't a shot. It was a factual statement. It was fact.
The first 40 minutes or so. So, yes, there have been some developments. Hopefully the quality of information I share or those sleepless nights. There hasn't been a Little Furman edition, which I know a lot of our listeners might have panicked if that was the case, because more often than not, it's probably not good for me to be procreating. But there is a lovely lady that's entered the picture. She's been warned about how the lifestyle will change during football season, whether it's by family, friends. I think she's in for a bit of a rude awakening. We'll call it Thursday night with the launch of college football.
I was on this great website. You might have heard of it. It's called bettheboardpodcast.com. There was a new blog put up there called 10 Signs You Are a Sports Better. And I'm looking at number 6. I'm going to tease it here. dating is confined to summer months. If a girl isn't already in love by the time football season starts, odds of making the relationship work long-term slip below 5%. So you're claiming this lady is in love with you already. Is this what you're saying?
We're not going to try and use those blanket generalizations in this. I mean, we did start dating.
It's a blog written by a guy named Todd Furman.
I said there were some components to that blog that are autobiographical. I'm not going to lie. And I'd be remiss in saying that we have already gotten into one heated discussion about my whereabouts for an early weekend in October, since I typically don't attend fall weddings unless I'm included in the groom's party or there's family obligations, we'll call it what you will. I did make that one concession. So in early October, I have to go to a wedding as a date. Not thrilled about it, but see, these are the things we do, compromising, showing that sign of maturity, and maybe there is hope for me yet to not become a full-blown degenerate.
Yeah, absolutely. You definitely want to make this work. I can tell there's effort involved. There's some trying involved. How many strikes does she get before she's out?
Well, she's been informed that there won't be any watching football with me on Saturdays or Sundays. So those ground rules have already been established. I said Sunday night is open once we get to halftime of the Sunday night football game, because most of the heavy lifting is already done. Thursday night, we may have to soften our stance a little bit, because in a standalone type scenario, you can show divided attention both to your female friend and to the game and the live betting opportunity.
Two TVs. Two TVs, that's it.
You do have two TVs, and Monday nights are available as well. The real sticking point here, which is going to be interesting, it'll probably test my patience more than anything else, she's not a football fan, and she's not a sports fan. So this has kind of been an eye-opening experience and a whirlwind the 7 months or so that we've actually been dating one another.
So what are the odds she makes it out alive on the back end of football season come, second week of February?
I mean, I have to make sure her friends and family and my friends and family aren't listening to this. So, we have to go optimistic here. We have to say, 90, 95%? Just give that plus or minus 5% margin of error on this poll?
I gotcha. Well, can I contribute one check mark, on the strike list? I was in town recently, in and out, quick, 72 hours. And you'd just gone on vacation with her to Chicago for, months, weeks, it felt like.
Yeah, months, 3 days. It may have felt like months for her after she had to meet the family.
Oh, wait, you were in Chicago, huh? I didn't hear from you when you were in Chicago. That's pretty that's pretty sweet.
You know what, Sam? Sometimes we have to dance amongst the raindrops.
I was in Vegas for 72 hours, and I was told the first night, Tuesday, was off limits because they had to hang out after being together in Chicago for a month. I got a nice, 90 minutes and a meatball and some chicken parm on Wednesday. Thursday, she had set him up for, a quadruple date. So I literally was in town 72 hours, and I saw the guy, for some chicken parm. That was basically it.
Hold on a second.
Long journey, across the country. She had him hogtied again while I was in town.
If you're going to throw me under the bus for this three-day trip that you were out here, Tuesday night you were 100% accurate. Did have to spend some quality time there. Wednesday night I made it available. Payne, you were priority number one.
He made it available, Sam.
We spent time talking to Sam on the phone. We had a good family-type atmosphere, a nice meal, the Italian dinner. We went through some final tweaks on the website.
And that host.
Thursday. Hold on a second. I'm
host.
Not finished.
I can't get over the
I'm
host. I may
finished.
Move. I may move to Vegas for that host.
I'm not finished here. Thursday, I said I'd be more than happy to establish plans, and somebody who acts like a 95-year-old man was taking a nap, so couldn't meet me for a drink or a chance to watch some football before I had to go on this, double date that I had outlined clearly about 48 hours beforehand. So don't throw me under the bus entirely for Thursday that your old ass had to be asleep and you had to take a nap in the middle of the afternoon.
Listen, these websites don't build themselves, all right? So, I needed a nap. It's been a long, 2-3 weeks crunching in everything for football season. It's okay. We will definitely get an update. Our listeners will want an update. Maybe we get one at the quarter poll just to see how things are going, and then at the halfway mark. And then again, before playoff time, we'll see if she withstands the test of time, my friend.
Yeah, well, websites may not build themselves, but there's a man on this podcast who may coin the phrase, these games just bet themselves. We can get into that later in the season as we go. NFC East, Payne, we know the big storyline here. Tony Romo sidelined for an indeterminate amount of time as starting quarterback. You had a good tweet out there, the Cowboys' record against the spread without Tony Romo under center. I think a little bit better than people would think at 9-12-1 against the spread. Dave talked about the shuffling division odds. The Giants kind of moved to the forefront. We'll call them 3-2 to take home the NFC East crown. Dallas and Washington, you know, lumped together right around 5-2. The Cowboys a bit shorter, the Redskins a bit longer, and the Eagles a long shot at 11-2. A lot of changing names and faces. Let's start with the Cowboys and the value loss with Tony Romo sideline. Win totals for some books, and I know BetOnline didn't adjust theirs. They only moved it a half a game going down to Dak Prescott. I'm not sure I'm ready to buy the hype of the SEC rookie.
Dak fever, baby. You know, this is a guy who, he's a worker. He's kind of defied the odds his, you know, entire college career. Mississippi State wasn't a great, you know, program. Every single week, he and that offense went up against the best defenses in the entire country, so maybe he has something. You talk to scouts, some guys said he's going to be a career backup. We'll find out soon enough. I definitely want to chill a little bit on all the Dak hype again. He was a backup quarterback in preseason games that teams weren't game planning for. They're eventually going to get some film on him, and they're going to make him do things that he's not comfortable with doing. Knowing Scott Linehan, very good offensive coordinator, he has the benefit of the best offensive line in football. He's got the benefit of Zeke Elliott, who looks like a total monster. If you watched the preseason game against Seattle, this is a man that was searching out contact with Cam Chancellor and bullying him over. So, huge benefit there to Dak. There's going to be a lot of changes to that offense. I think you have to have a lot of rollouts, a lot of things that allow Dak to use his strengths, which are his wheels. So that will be an interesting element. And again, I think that run game was going to have to be implemented anyways for two reasons. One, to kind of preserve Tony Romo. That went out the window. And two, this defense is an absolute train wreck. The front four is bad. Linebackers have suspensions. Past Lee, there's not much at the linebacker position, and right now that's a guy who has not proven to stay healthy. So if he goes out, he gets injured on defense, that might be one of the worst defenses in all in the league. So you're going to have to see them, you know, implement that ground game to kind of keep the defense off the field. The Giants, everybody seems to love them. They're a public team, but that is some professional money on there. The question is, can this team stay healthy? For 3 years straight, they have lost more games to injury than any team in the NFL. Something's got to be going on here. Maybe it was Coughlin. We'll see. Was he practicing them too hard? Were there too many padded and hitting sessions throughout camp and practice week to week? Maybe that's partly why there was a change. Was it the strength and conditioning coach? You really don't know. But you really have to like what they've done defensively. It's not the strategy to build long-term, going out and spending boatloads of money to acquire free agents. But in this one-year setting with a guy like Eli Manning, whose time is very limited when it comes to the rest of his career, they spent money big. You know, they added nice pieces, too. Eli Apple looks to be, you know, coming along quicker than they thought in the draft. You sign Leon Hall, who was just a very cheap player, really one of the better slot corners in efficiency last year. He did have a little back procedure where he had some, you know, some of his spine shaved a little bit. We'll see if he can come back healthy. If he is, that secondary, which was a weakness, could definitely be a strength this year. So that's kind of the big thing there. The Eagles, yes, a lot of public money going under. A lot of sharp money going under, too. It will be interesting to see, though, that defense should improve, not being on the field under Chip Kelly all the time. One thing we know about Doug Peterson is he comes from the school of Andy Reid, which is dink and dunk. And we know one thing, Bradford, he is accurate. That fits him best. The one question is, though, it's a first-year head coach. And there's kind of a saying, you don't know what you don't know. And that's something that has always been said. Even the first-year guys, after they've gone down the line 2 or 3 years, you just really never know. It's all about repetition. Chip Kelly, though, left the cupboard pretty bare when it comes to talent, his ego, his system. He was basically, he thought he could just plug anybody in offensively, and that train would still run smoothly and on time, so there's just not a lot of weapons there. Organizationally, I don't know. It's just odd. Like, it's a nice way to say they invested weirdly. You know, quarterbacks, they spent money on three guys. They moved up and spent assets to acquire some of these guys. I just don't know. I feel like they've spent a lot on the position, and there's still really no huge resolution long-term or even for this season. Carson Wentz seems like a nice kid. hopefully the city of Philadelphia, you know, doesn't chew him up, spit him out. Small town guy, small school kid. I don't really, you know, endorse shitting in gas station bathrooms on the interstate in general. But if you do, don't get yourself locked in there. If you do, don't tweet out about it that you got locked in there. So I think the situation's kind of an abortion at quarterback. I really don't know where they're going. If you look at a lot of the scout film, everyone, there's a lot of sharp guys that went back, watched every throw the kid made, said if he played in the SEC, he would have thrown 21 additional interceptions. So he's a media favorite already. He's a likable kid. If you looked at some of the headlines after that first preseason game, Wentz moves the offense and has a lot of fun was what was said. He completed 50% of his passes. He threw for 89 yards, had an interception, broke two ribs. Tons of fun, it sounded like. So I'm not really there yet on the Eagles. A lot of professional money, a lot of public money on that under. And the Redskins, one of the largest totals for professional bettors. Under 7.5, very, very heavy. It's kind of a bit scary when you look at all those weapons for Washington. A bit scary when you look at a general manager in Scott McLaughlin, who I absolutely love. I think he's doing things great there, nearly perfect over the last 18 months. Then Romo goes down. The division kind of goes up for grabs. So I'm a little nervous on that win total that we played, but it still stands. That's one of the sharper win totals this year, going under 7.5. The schedule was extremely easy last year. Net-wise, when it came to points, they were basically break-even, so they overachieved. This year, the schedule gets much, much tougher. So I see a lot of the reasons the Redskins got hammered by the professionals, but there is a ton of offensive weapons.
Yeah, and when you talk about them getting hammered under, I wanted to get your take, since I know a lot of that sharp money on the Redskins under came in assuming the Cowboys were going to have their full complement of weapons and a healthy Tony Romo. Does his absence change the outlook for the Giants, the Cowboys, or the Eagles at all in your estimation?
Yeah, I mean, I think Tony Romo is a pretty good quarterback. It's pretty well stated that I know a lot of people bag on him. He doesn't win the big game, yada, yada, yada. But he is clearly better than Dak Prescott at this point. Again, it'll be interesting to see when you play a game in the preseason where nobody's game planning for you and there's really no pressure. It's much different animal when you're making your first start and everybody is looking at you. I guess, you know, the one question mark here is, let's look at this schedule here for Washington. If I'm looking at this accurately, yeah, they're going to fortunately play Dallas early in the season. So they're going to get Dak Prescott. I guess the benefit there is there's not going to be a ton of film on Dak Prescott. It'll be a little different for teams facing him in weeks, you know, 3, 4, 5, and 6. So maybe there's a little built-in advantage there for the Cowboys in terms of teams not really knowing what Dak Prescott is yet. So it'll be interesting to see, but very, very sharp money on this Redskins. The running back situation there, I will say this, a bit of a mess. You don't know what you have till it's gone. Alfred Morris, outside of Adrian Peterson, more rushing yards than anybody the last 3 years. So I know he tailed off a bit last year. I think it was more system fit, not what Gruden wanted to run. Gruden is going to be a guy that takes shots down the field, likes to chuck the ball a little bit. That running back situation still a little weird. And we know this team right now. As great as those weapons are, you look at DeSean Jackson, he's fragile. You look at Jordan Reed, he's a bit fragile. So either of those goes down, those guys go down, it could be tough. But some news through the grapevine that I've been told. DeSean Jackson, contract year. He looks like he's in shape and ready to play. He's been absolutely toasting Josh Norman at practice. So I think this could be a big year for the guy who needs some money.
Win totals for the teams currently on the board, the Giants over under 8. You have to lay $1.50 if you want to go over that number. Philadelphia win total 7 minus $1.45 to the under at BetOnline. And, of course, the Washington Redskins that pay now line. One of the sharper positions from the professionals. Still a number widely available at the pros went under. This total 7.5 under minus $1.20. Payne, I want to give you two quick prop bets as regards to the NFC East. Yes or no, we will see Carson Wentz throw a pass this season for the Philadelphia Eagles.
No. What's okay. I don't even know what the price is.
No. It's not a prop. It's available. We're making it up on the fly here. I figure Chase Daniel most likely to get reps if something were to happen to Sam Bradford.
Doug Peterson. That's Doug Peterson's guy. He handpicked him.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason behind that. And secondly, of all the defensive movement we've seen for these four rosters, we know the Cowboys probably not in the equation. The Eagles didn't do a ton. Which player a fresh face in a new place makes the biggest impact? Is it Josh Norman or one of the players we're talking about for the Giants?
Yeah, I don't think it's Josh Norman. As good as picking him up was, and it was a weakness, he's actually not a scheme fit. They're going to have to figure out what to do with Josh Norman in that regard, because if you look, he is not a man press corner, and that's kind of what the Redskins like to do, and that's the reason he's been getting toasted every day at practice. He's more of a zone guy. For the Giants, you know, it's probably going to be Olivier Vernon, but from what I hear, it could be a guy that they've had for all these years. Jason Pierre-Paul has looked like an absolute beast, starting to get life acclimated with half a hand. He's in the gym. He has been an absolute beast. So you could have a real nice resurgence there with Olivier Vernon and Jason Pierre-Paul coming back this year. Spagnuolo, year two back there. If you really look at these preseason games, really look at this. I know the Giants' offense hasn't been great. But when you talk about a first-team defense, absolutely swarmed the Dolphins preseason game week 1, 2, 3 and outs. They played Buffalo, held them scoreless for a quarter and a half. This first-team defense really looks good.
One last thing, too, buying or selling Victor Cruz and his ability to contribute.
Let's put this nicely. He's kind of checked out a little bit, both from receiving checks.
He's getting all those checks now for appearances on one of our favorite shows, Baller, so you can't really fault him for that.
Yeah, and he's been hanging out with some of Miami's finest ladies. He's kind of made his money. Now, listen, he's a worker. I just don't know if he's fully healthy yet. And kind of what we see, when one thing isn't fully healthy, it leads to another injury. There's a reason Sterling Shepard was drafted early. They're going to need to find that third wideout, whether it's Cruz or if Cruz goes down, another guy, and Shepard kind of operates in that slot. Shepard's going to operate in the slot regardless. I think that's a huge pickup for them. I think he's going to have a big year. But Cruz, at this point, you played without him last year. I think it's just a bonus at this point.
Very interesting. We know Ruben Randall no longer wearing the colors of Big Blue. Actually, went over to the Eagles.
Wearing the colors. No longer wearing the colors of the Eagles either.
It was cut by the Eagles. He may be on the bread line now when the start of the season rolls around. But from the muddled picture of parity and competitive balance in the NFC East to one division that doesn't look to be so competitive, at least on paper, the NFC South with the Carolina Panthers, an overwhelming 2-5 favorite to repeat as division champions, and then three teams vying for maybe second place or potentially a sleeper in the mix. When you look at the Atlanta Falcons 13-2 to win the NFC South, both the Saints and Bucks at 7-1. Let's start with the Panthers, a team that we were very slow to get on their bandwagon, if you can even say we got on their bandwagon at all, at least had a chance to recoup some of the money we lost on them during the regular season with Denver in the Super Bowl. Super Bowl hangover, something very real. 40% of the time, the team getting there, coming up short in football's biggest game, it doesn't get back to the postseason. Cam Newton, what will we see from him? The return of Kelvin Benjamin. But still a team that was largely fortunate, Payne, by a lot of the advanced metrics, especially in the turnover margin department.
We did get some of that Panthers fade money back a little bit earlier than Super Bowl. I hear they played the Atlanta Falcons and were laying 7.5 on the road.
Yeah, we did get some back there, but that only recouped about a quarter of the money I'd lost, especially with me pushing in full, you know, whole hog on the Dallas Cowboys on Thanksgiving.
That was a tough one. The Panthers, you know, they won a lot of close ball games too, so that's something that evens out a bit. Josh Norman, clearly, you know, they weren't going to overpay the guy. They see him every day at practice. They kind of know what he is. They feel like he's more of a system guy. Who knows? We'll see. You get Kelvin Benjamin back. Does Devin Funchess take that next step, become another reliable weapon for Cam Newton? Suddenly, Ted Ginn had a resurgence last year. Olsen is who he is. It looks like he's got a nice receiving core here overall. The defense led by Luke Kuechly, they're going to be stout every single year. And when it comes to the Panthers, I'm not so much buying them as I am selling the rest of this division. It is bad, to put it nicely. The Falcons, they got off to a nice start last year. It was one of the easier schedules in all of football. Started 5-0, ended 3-8. The schedule this year, much, much, much tougher. So they really started hot, beat nobody last year. I think the schedule comes into play this year. The one other thing that I looked at this team is what they do in the red zone. Maybe Coleman coming back, producing a little more power, they become better in the red zone. But Matt Ryan was an absolute mess, turning the ball over left and right in the red zone. All of a sudden, they thought things were fixed. You watch the third preseason game. Yes, it's preseason, but that's kind of the dress rehearsal. Gets into the red zone. Who he's throwing to, I do not know. And while it's a pretty funny joke, you know, there was video surfacing all over the internet of him being picked off by a coach, you know, a few months back in camp. This is kind of a real thing. And if you read some quotes, they're talking about this offense throwing to spots and throwing to areas. I'm all for throwing guys open, but there's actually got to be a guy there within the vicinity. So this is going to be an interesting thing to kind of see materialize. I think we're going to see some sharp money come in on the Falcons still at this point on under 7.5. The Saints, you know, offensively, we kind of talked about this. I think they are who they are. I'm not going to tip the hand on your fantasy sleeper there. We'll wait for that a little bit till next week. Offensively, they're going to be fine. And when you look at Drew Brees, we kind of always talked about his arm strength declining, but when you really look at the numbers, he was one of the worst quarterbacks on passes of 7 yards or less last year, which was completely stunning to me. And he was one of the best quarterbacks on deep passes, so maybe he's still got enough in the tank there. The defense isn't very good, but from a relative standpoint, you can't be any worse than 32, what Rob Ryan led them to. So there's got to be some improvement there. It's going to be a relative improvement, but you can't be worse than 32. So I guess that's a positive sign if you're in New Orleans. The Bucks, maybe I'm a little biased here. I think the defense improved a bit. Brent Grimes getting up there in age, but when you look at that secondary, still an upgrade there. Love the kid out of Florida. I think he's going to be a day one starter there. So I think the defense definitely improved a bit. Can Jameis Winston take that next step? Can he not make that costly interception, that costly mistake? The weapons are there. So I think the Bucs do take that next step. Where is that next step, though? That's the question. Is it 7-9 because that's the next step? Is it 500? Or are they making, you know, a real run at this division? And I think that's the big question. But it all comes down to the quarterback position and Jameis Winston.
And when you mentioned some of these win totals, Tampa Bay right now, 7.5 under minus $1.30 at BetOnline. Carolina, of course, the front runner, and we'll get a chance to see them in a standalone situation against Denver with Super Bowl revenge. Their win total, 10.5 under minus $1.20. The Falcons, 7.5 under minus $1.40. And New Orleans still trying to maybe forge a potential identity. Their win total, 7. Over minus $1.30, a game that, you know, I'll be interested to get your take next week. The Saints hosting the Raiders should be a fascinating matchup between two teams expected to potentially trend in opposite directions. Maybe a good indication of what we're looking at. NFC North, I guess first things first, is it just a two-horse race between the Packers and Vikings with the Lions and Bears trying to pick up the slack? We know the biggest defection, so to speak, in the division, Calvin Johnson deciding to call it a career, getting sick and tired of losing with his beat-up body there in the Motor City. The Bears, what we see from Jay Cutler, life without Adam Gase can be a very different type situation, given how efficient Cutler was under center, setting career best in passer rating and fewest interceptions a season ago. But we may as well start with the top dog, Payne. The Green Bay Packers, underachieved for large stretches, had a chance to upset Arizona coming up a bit short in overtime. The big thing for them, they will get the services of Jordy Nelson back. Can't come a moment too soon for Aaron Rodgers in this high-powered offense.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll talk about the Packers, Vikings, Lions a little bit, and then I'll let Sam act as Aroldis Chapman. He can kind of talk about his home team, Bears. He's a little more dialed in there, covers them, so we'll get that aspect from Sam. When it comes to the Packers, you know, the question mark here is obviously Jordy Nelson. Does he come back fully healthy? The knee's nagging him a little bit. He is absolutely going to be needed because we saw when he was out, basically what teams did once they got some film is just play press man coverage and just squat on these receivers. They could not get separation. Cobb is a very, very nice wide receiver, but he's much better operating in the slot on the opposing team's third or fourth best corner. You line him up outside, things start to completely change for him. Aaron Rodgers, you know, by all accounts, a little bit of a down year for him, held on to the ball a little too long. You don't want to fault him for that because when you have a guy with that much talent, you want to be able to hand him the ball and say go. but there's been some talks about him not really running the offense, you know, how they would like it. So that'll be an interesting dynamic there this year. The defense, it should be okay. The running game, I don't know. He's lost weight. Lacy's lost weight. That's great. That's fine. You know, chilled out on the cheeseburgers, you know, over the off season. But the question becomes, in season, when you're not really working out as much, when you're not really traveling as much, when you're not in the weight room, does that weight pile back on and does he become a non-factor? We'll see. I believe he's in a contract year, so for the sake of him, I hope he stays in shape. The Lions, not much to say. Like, I'm just not a Jim Caldwell guy. You know, you've lost a lot of weapons there. Defensively, you've lost some weapons. Tulloch, I know, is coming back from a knee injury, but the guy's a tackling machine. I just don't know if the defense upgraded. I don't trust Jim Caldwell. I just don't know. I don't think they're going to be very good. A lot of the professionals are selling the Lions. Don't really have much to say on them. This is the intriguing team for me here, is the Vikings. You know, one thing that we got to look at is Teddy Bridgewater moving into a dome. He's a kid that I'm very familiar with. He's a Miami guy. We've been able to evaluate him. He does not drive the ball with velocity. It's been the case in college. It was the case at the Combine and through really the first two seasons. So going into this dome, will we see, you know, drastic improvements? I think the organization said, look, you know, this is our guy. This is our franchise QB. Let's do what suits us first as an organization, but secondly, what suits our franchise player and what will help us moving forward. It's an extremely limited sample size, and it's actually a lopsided sample size. But when it comes to indoor games versus outdoor games for Bridgewater, in his career, he's completing 71% of his passes indoors. That's 7% better than outdoors. He's averaging 8.1 yards per pass completion indoors, 6.6 outdoors. The question here becomes, and what bettors will have to weigh, and what we still don't know yet as professional bettors, I've spoke to a lot of the groups, what is the potential improvement from Teddy Bridgewater playing in a dome, and will it come at the cost of losing some home field advantage in terms of temperature? We saw the cold weather really hinder Minnesota's opponents. They were playing at the college, Minnesota, 2014-2015. They were 12-5 against the spread in those home games through two seasons. I know it's easy to say all players hate playing in the cold. They all hate hitting in the cold. And while that's true, there's an advantage when you practice in it all week, when you play most of your games in it, as opposed to, let's say, Seattle, where you just drop them in a one-game setting into this freezing temperature. So it's going to be interesting to gauge that. Teddy definitely improves in a dome, but will the team's home field advantage, you know, tick down a notch? Love the addition of Tony Sperano as the offensive line coach. He's improved every offensive line he's gone to. They pick up Alex Boone in free agency. That's a huge get. Love the backfield. There's three weapons there. Outside, though, you know, touch limited. Huge on Diggs. They'll need Charles Johnson to actually step up. Will Treadwell flash in his rookie year? If those things happen, you know, this is a team that could win the division and potentially even the Super Bowl.
Well, a team that can win the division, the Chicago Bears. Sammy, what kind of intel you got for us there, buddy?
Toughness with this team is a lot better. You know, the Mark Trestman era sort of oozed all the toughness out of this bunch. They're tougher. They're well-coached. John Fox will keep games close. That being said, the talent disparity, too big to ignore. You've got a lack of offensive playmakers. Jeremy Langford is going to be asked to carry the mail. You don't have a true proven number one receiver. Alshon Jeffery just can't stay healthy. Kyle Long, Pro Bowler on offense, dealing with something that could be a torn labrum. They haven't really announced it. They've tried to keep you know, the quiet sense of, I guess, knowledge on it. They don't want people to know what's going on. Pernell McPhee was their best defensive player last year. His knee injury might keep him on the PUP list through week six. So, and then you look at the playmakers. Kevin White had three catches in the preseason for 12 yards. I don't know.
Hey, that's three more catches than he had last year, to Kevin White's credit.
Right. So you've got a couple often injured receivers. You don't have a proven running back. The offensive line is now in shambles because you've got Long, who's hurt. You lost Grasu, your center. So Ted Larson is starting at center now. I don't know where the points come from on offense. And I think it was Chris Johnson a couple years ago in Tennessee was dogging Dowell Loggins' play calling skills. I think Chris Johnson is in the right here three games through the preseason.
I will say
he looks ugly.
Yeah, I will say one thing, though. The Bears probably, you hate to put too much emphasis on a preseason schedule. They had a pretty tough schedule. They took on the Patriots, they took on the Broncos, and they took on Kansas City. Payne, you mentioned Denver. We know a ton of defensive depth, Kansas City as well. Yep. Well, of course, the Bears playing one of the more interesting games, maybe from setting the pace and tone when they travel to Houston for that opener. Division odds, the NFC North, the Packers, the favorite at 2-3, the Vikings, maybe the team capable of stepping up and repeating as division champs at 2-1, the Bears 10-1, Lions 12-1 as a long shot. And the NFC West, two-team division, I'll say I'm not ready to put the Rams and 49ers in the mix. You're looking at the Seahawks, a slight favorite here at 5-6. The Cardinals at 7-5, maybe some cause for concern given Carson Palmer this preseason. Rams 10-1, 49ers at 20-1. Payne, real quickly, and I don't want to shortchange this division, but we'll have a chance to talk about these teams probably in greater detail. Seahawks and Cardinals, what does the season outlook look like from your perspective?
Yeah, for the Cardinals, tons of sharp money on the over. Came in at 9.5, minus 60. Some places now dealing 10.5. Carson Palmer, interceptions. He finished last year, threw six in the last two playoff games. He's got three picks in the preseason. I think he's only got like 22 attempts. So it'll be interesting to see. Love Arians. So we'll see what they can do offensively. It's a deep strike offense. They tend to struggle just a touch in the red zone. I think they're going to have to hand the ball off more there, where Carson Palmer seems to kind of try to fit balls in there. So the other key here is defensively. They bring in Chandler Jones. You draft Cam Dicci, who a lot of people think is a top seven talent. So you get some pass rush there. You get Tyrann Mathieu back. So the key there for them defensively is last year they had to blitz to get pressure. They were 27th in efficiency at getting after the quarterback. I don't think they're going to need to leave themselves as exposed this year. So that's the big thing there. The other key factor to going over on that win total was kind of getting advanced information on Brady. And when you can take a team that was a pick 'em in week one now laying six, it really distorts that win total. So that was the reason why a lot of sharp bettors went over. Seahawks, they are what they are. They're going to be vastly improved. They're not going to start as slow. There's not, turmoil with contracts to start the season. Two of their first three losses were in overtime. You could have flipped a coin and they could have easily been 2-1 instead of 1-2. The offensive line, still the biggest question mark. Weirdly enough, they have a good trait. They can run block. They just can't pass block, and we saw that. So pass protection, they were ranked 30th in efficiency last year. That's even with a mobile Russell Wilson. So they're going to need to improve on that category. One thing here with the 49ers, very quickly, Chip Kelly. You'll probably see him on a college sideline near you very soon. Just kind of refuses to change his system. This team was 15% faster in pace than the second fastest team. And when you don't have talent, you can't really go fast. Think of college basketball, the lesser team, they want to play out the shot clock, shorten the game kind of thing. Chip Kelly doesn't do that. And right now, when you look at this team, Chip Kelly last year, when he led in games by seven or more, he was still faster than 19 other teams when they trailed by seven or more. Just to kind of paint that picture, there's not a lot of talent here. When he inherited a team in Philadelphia, even though they had a down year, loads of talent. There is just no talent here. So it's going to be interesting to see him try to play fast. The Rams, I know a lot of people are talking about this team, and it's a touching point. CBS came out with an article in May talking about distance traveled. They travel more than anybody this year, 32,072 miles. To put that in perspective, we talked about the Pittsburgh Steelers. They travel 5,100 miles all season long, so that's going to be big. The last touching point on this, and I had one of my guys look it up, so I want to give him credit for it. He listens to this. There's always this kind of mark when it comes to Hard Knocks, and I think everybody thinks teams are overvalued when it comes to Hard Knocks, and it kind of creates this kind of distraction, so to speak. So through 11 seasons, this is now season 12, so TBD on how the Rams do, but through 11 seasons, teams that are on Hard Knocks, 92-88-4 against the spread. Everybody get back to your day job. You won't get rich blindly fading the team on Hard Knocks. Five of the 11 teams have made the playoffs as well. I'm not saying the Rams do it. I have no feeling on this. A lot of sharp guys have gone under the seven, but Hard Knocks is not a reason to just blindly fade the Rams.
Pretty interesting how the narrative gets spun the way people are so inclined. And as you mentioned, the Rams and 49ers will get a great indication of what both those teams are in the Monday night edition of the Nightcap Wrap, putting a bow all entirely on week one. Of course, for folks not familiar with our schedule, we'll come to you every Monday and Thursday. Some minor tweaks late in the year when we talk about holidays. But Payne, as far as the opening edition where we preview all the week one games, safe to say that we'll probably drop a week from today, next Tuesday, give it a chance to breathe and allow people to truly dig in to the 16 opening week matchups.
Hey, we're all at the mercy of you and your girlfriend. Fingers crossed for me, Sam, and all our loyal listeners that we can get you to do it on Tuesday. Who knows?
You know,
maybe a sleepover on Monday night runs a little longer into Tuesday morning. Whatever works best for you.
Yeah,
bud.
Clear your
you
schedule.
Just let us know.
Clear the schedule.
It all depends, Payne, to be completely honest, and you can't throw me under the bus for this like I know you're going to. You know, how late I watch the DVR edition of Bachelor in Paradise. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, how early I can wake up Tuesday morning and give you my undivided attention and focus. Don't spoil it. I haven't watched last night's episode yet, though.
Yeah, it's not a me thing at this point. Haven't had time. Maybe if I find time, I likely won't at this point in the year, but I'm glad that you can find time at this
here
point
we go.
Of the year to watch
I was wondering,
The Bachelor
I was wondering
Paradise.
How the great spin doctor would go, so I applaud you for that.
We gotta hurry up.
I'm trying to get it wrapped, and you're in here jumping in here.
These are a few things. Cuts come today at 4 p.m. Teams have to turn their rosters to 75, down to 53 on Saturday. We did not touch on a couple of things: injury status changes, the probable tag being removed, also a couple key rule changes. We'll touch on those next week. And can I just wrap this goddamn thing up? Go to bettheboardpodcast.com. Lots of blogs. Buy a T-shirt before we get sued. That's about it.
Well, Bet the Board Pod is the Twitter handle. Payne can be followed on Twitter as well, at Payne Insider. Our lovely producer, Sam, can be found on Twitter as well, at SP Shoot. Dave Mason, at Dave Mason, B-O-L. You can follow me on Twitter, at Todd Furman. Payne, one last thing. Any preseason gold you want to share with our listeners to get them in the right mindset to start making money with us all fall long?
I hear the Miami Dolphins are a little beat up this week.
We will take that and see if we can get to the window with a ticket on the Tennessee Titans. For Payne Insider, Sam Panjatovic, Dave Mason, and the folks at Bet Online, thank you for coming back to sponsors for Season 2. I'm Todd Furman. SoundCloud, iTunes, or visit us, more importantly, at the brand-new, sharp-looking website, BetTheBoardPodcast.com. We'll be back with you next week. Looking forward to another great season here on Bet the Board.